cigar into a sacrament. The only response to the deification of tyranny by so-called developed nations' idolatry of ideology. North, south, east, west, kill the best and buy the rest. It's just spend a buck to make a buck. You don't really give a flying fuck about the people in misery. IMF, dirty MF, takes away everything it can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt.
All right, hey everybody, this is Diane from Radio Free Alaska.
Todd in Los Angeles.
I was thinking the California Resistance. And you are joining us for the first episode of This Conversation Rocks in 2017.
2017-01. Yep. Thank God this is last year's over. So moving on, we're not even going to address last year other than to say, oh, thank God that's fucking over.
Except we're going to be talking about the new Trump administration. So of course we're addressing last year.
Yes, but it's the new administration. It doesn't actually happen for another 19 days. So
there you go. And Benjamin Netanyahu is counting the days, so...
Yeah, fuck that guy.
I know, right?
All right, so I think after a little bit of discussion, we decided that we're going to focus on Trump's pick for Secretary of State.
Right. So
We're just going to rename the Department of Business.
We're going to rename like the Treasury. There's no longer a Secretary of the Treasury. It's just they roll State and Treasury into one role. So Rex Tillerson, if people don't know, and I'm sure our listeners do, is the pick for Secretary of State.
And what is Mr. Tillerson most famous for?
Well, Mr. Tillerson is most famous for, and actually only famous for, because it's the only thing he's ever done. He's the CEO of Exxon. Although, this is interesting, I was reading just tonight that he was supposed to have stepped down as of yesterday, and there is supposed to be a new CEO of Exxon as of today, a guy named Darren Woods. So...
Well, good.
So Tillerson was supposed to have retired as of the end of 2016.
Okay. Well, so the illusion that...
That he no longer has any interest in Exxon.
Has started.
Which, we'll get into that, because, oh boy, was the reading for today's assignment eye-opening or what?
Well, the guy has, what, $200 million in stock?
So he has, I looked all this up actually, he has 2.6 million shares in Exxon as a part of his retirement package.
Okay.
And,
at today's value?
At today's value, $240
million. $240
million. Yeah. So right now he has a $240 million interest in how Exxon does in the global market.
You don't think that's going to cause a conflict for him?
No.
Okay. No. Okay.
Drain the swamp. Hashtag drain the swamp.
So, it's interesting, right? Because you said it. This is the only job he's ever had. Worked his way up through Exxon, right?
Right. He actually, when he finished college, went to work for Exxon, and that was back in the early 70s. He's been with Exxon since 1975.
Right, and so he was not in charge when Exxon ran the Valdez over Alaska, right?
I don't think he was, although I don't know that for sure. I do have friends who are pretty involved heavily still in in following up on the Exxon Valdez, and they were quite familiar with Rex Tillerson's name, so...
Oh, sure, but, you know, that's because it's been just an ongoing thing.
Right.
Exxon never wanted to do anything.
So back in the 90s, and of course, Exxon Valdez happened in 1989, spring of 1989, Tillerson spent most of the 90s in Russia and overseeing relations with Russia. So
we'd say no, he was not the CEO at that time, and therefore right. not ultimately the guy who was responsible for dumping an entire oil tanker on the coast.
Although, you know, I figured I would get into it down the road, but I may as well get into it now. There are a lot of Alaskans who see this as a real insult to them as Alaskans, because for many, many people, the Exxon Valdez is not over, and it will never be over.
Right, well, you know.
So to have the Secretary of State nominee be the CEO of ExxonMobil is a huge insult. Not that anyone cares. Pussy grabbing is a huge insult, but that didn't
right.
get us very far, so...
Well, I suspect it'd be like, you know, the Louisiana being upset if the head of BP had been named as the Secretary of State.
Very much so. Very much so. Although I do want to point out, because I thought this was interesting, and I'm just going to hit people with this right away, since we're talking about it. There's been ongoing research into how Prince William Sound has recovered or not recovered since the Exxon Valdez. And 2014 was the 25th anniversary of the oil spill there. And as of reports in 2010, only 13 of the 32 species that are being monitored for recovery were listed as recovering or potentially recovering. So there's a herring fishery that was closed shortly after the Exxon Valdez spill happened, and it will probably never reopen. The herring population was completely devastated, and that used to be a hugely, hugely productive and wealthy fishery in Prince William Sound. And the resident orca pod, which people may not give a shit about killer whales, but I happen to, the resident orca pod lost 22 members of its pod to the spill and has not produced a calf since. So odds are that that pod is going to die out.
Yeah.
Which is super sad.
Okay, so.
So that's the happy Alaskan perspective on Rex Tillerson.
Right, so.
Looking at it from a bigger perspective, I'm sorry I'm talking over you already, but I was thinking about this as I was taking notes on the Exxon Valdez report that I was reading. And, you know, really for me, Rex Tillerson's appointment just means that we're backing away from any kind of sustainable energy future. You know,
it means
we're walking into more deep water and more Exxon Valdez, and we're walking away from any kind of sustainable energy future.
That's certainly what I would tend to believe, although, of course, nobody has said that explicitly.
Well, look at us breaking news in 2017.
Yeah, well, hashtag not fake news, but what the fuck do you think is really going on, right?
Right.
Yeah, so we have some serious concerns about this guy from the standpoint of, well, let's see, Paris Accords, global warming in general, environmental damage vis-a-vis oil spills, deep water drilling. And people say, well, he's going to be Secretary of State. Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean that he's not going to then be pushing for oil deals, you know, to get us deep water drilling, as you pointed out, you know, maybe off the coast of some other poor fucking country, you know?
Well, and I think that's really it. You know, I read a number of articles, and one of the essays that I read, I think it was in Fortune magazine, basically said, from here on out, if he gets confirmed, Russian oil and gas deals are American interests from here on out.
Right, and that, by the way, should never be the case. You know,
right?
Never be the case that we're concerned, that we're wanting to get on the side of that.
Right.
God.
And you know, I mean, I think that's even bigger. There's so much that is worrisome about Tillerson being in this role, but his ties to Russia, and I'm not even going there in terms of what may or may not have happened with the election, but his ties to Russia and his inability, and I, you know, I'm presupposing here, but his inability to see anything other than through the lens of what's going to benefit the oil and gas industry globally.
Right.
And because he has such deep ties to Russia, what's going to benefit Russia globally?
Right. Well, not just Russia, right? Let's talk about the Middle East, oil in the Middle East, right. And the fact that we need to not be getting our oil from the Middle East, so that we don't have to deal with their shit either. But, you know, as we were talking about just before we got started, it is Israel is concerned, which I love this part of it. Israel is concerned because Tillerson probably has more in common with the Gulf states, and therefore is probably a little more preferential to them than previous secretaries of state have been. On the other hand, I don't need a secretary of state who's truly in bed with Saudi, Emirate, Kuwaiti,
right,
Iraq, Iran, oil interests, right?
Well, you know, and the article that I was reading, and I read so many tonight prepping for this, but one of them said that he may very well specifically have preferential treatment with Iran because of their oil interests. So that poses some real issues with Israel. And the hardline Israelis that were interviewed in various sources that were summarized in an article I read, sources like the Times of Israel and different hardline Israeli news sources, they're scared. You know, they're kind of concerned that this guy doesn't have an obvious position on Israel, and that really his obvious position is, again, benefiting those relationships that he's already made with the Gulf states. So, which, you know, when you look at that Secretary Kerry's speech last week and us taking a pass on voting in the UN about Israel, it's a complete 180, you know?
Yeah.
And this fear that Tillerson may not be preferential to Israel is completely separate from what we're seeing play out between Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu. So that could be very interesting just in terms of the conflict. And it could actually mediate things in the Middle East a little bit. You know, one of the other things that I read is that someone like Tillerson is going to point out that being Islamophobic and making huge, sweeping anti-Muslim statements is not really going to be financially beneficial to the United States.
No shit.
So, you know, that could be really interesting.
So, this is the thing that I'm really most puzzled about. Is it possible for the United States to have done the right thing for all the wrong reasons here?
No, because I think that there are.
I don't think we can actually pull a rabbit out of our hat.
Yeah, I don't think we can.
There's a part of my brain that gets scrambled, you know, because it's like, okay, now I'll grant you that the Democrats, they could never have done this, and this could actually, you know, be beneficial vis-a-vis shutting up Israel for a little while. Because it's not really in our best interest to always be in lockstep with them.
Right.
On the other hand, they may make us more lockstep with other states that we don't want to be either. Okay, that's not good either. You know, so, man, my brain just goes...
Well, and you know, so here's another thing that I was reading tonight. I was looking around and I thought, okay, I'll just Google what are the odds of Rex Tillerson being confirmed.
Hmm.
So
100%, right?
Well, not quite that good, but David Corn of The Nation tweeted very recently that there was like a 40% chance that he wouldn't get confirmed. So that's a 60% chance that he will be. And the article that I was looking at, I'm going to say in Forbes or Fortune, basically said, no, I'm lying. It was in the Washington Post. Basically said that the Democrats are already saying they don't really think they stand much in the way of a chance of blocking his confirmation.
No, and they don't. And and there's a reason they don't.
And he's potentially the most, the most challenging of the nominees.
Okay. I wouldn't have thought so, but...
Well, I mean, so it was interesting. They named a couple of other fights that Trump is really facing. So Jeff Sessions and his civil rights record, right?
Yeah. That one, problematic. The lunatic that's Mathis, you know, for Secretary of Defense.
Right. Mattis. Mad Dog Mattis. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one that Washington Post named was Steve Mnuchin. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. He's the nominee for Treasury Secretary. So this guy was the CEO of a bank called One West Bank in 2008-2009 during the meltdown, the financial meltdown and the housing crisis.
So he's perfect, yeah.
Well, but here's the thing. So
he's perfect.
Right. He may actually get some real pushback because One West was notorious for their aggressive foreclosure tactics, including the foreclosure tactics that they used in deep, deep red America. So he might actually get some pushback because he ticked off a bunch of Republicans.
Yeah, but... Yes, but by my calculation, they got a couple of Republican votes to spare.
Yeah, I was reading, and basically they need to flip 2 Republican votes to block any one nominee. And this is really critical. This goes to what you texted to me the other day. So I found this fine print just totally buried in one article, and it said... Dems remove the filibuster as an option during the 113th Congress. Therefore, Republicans only need a simple majority to confirm any of these people. So they only need, what, 51?
51, yeah.
So, you know, in our post-election episode, I remember saying, oh, thank God the filibuster's intact, because
yeah,
that was...
we were totally...
because
we're
that's
totally
what
wrong.
I was reading. So what the hell happened?
Nobody paid attention to the move that that fucking Harry Reid made back in 2013. On November 21st, 2013, then Majority Leader Harry Reid led a Democratic Party push to mostly kill the filibuster, the tool used by minority parties in the past to block votes and motions in the Senate. Reid used a series of parliamentary tactics to change the number of votes needed to move motions onto the Senate floor for most presidential nominations from 60 to 50.
So is it just nominations, or are there other areas where we've lost the power of the filibuster as well?
The rules apply to federal judge and executive office nominees, but not motions about Supreme Court nominee and legislation under consideration. So basically, the likelihood is Trump is going to get everybody on the slate that he wants.
Ugh.
I mean, and so I'm really kind of like at this moment, like, well, what the fuck are we supposed to do? So we'll talk about that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But so we'll be able to gear up for the Supreme Court because we will be able to filibuster Supreme Court nominations. But I just want again, once again, want to say, hey, Harry Reid, fuck you. So thanks
right.
for fucking us.
I mean, I just feel more and more sold down the river by the Democratic Party every time I turn around.
And it's because the Republicans were filibustering Obama's nominations.
So somehow we thought it would be really great to take away...
Now, which would work really great if the Republicans never got control of the Senate again.
Right, except that's really damn short-sighted, right?
So when you get Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell earlier statements about, yeah, we're not going to change the filibuster, this is what they meant.
Right.
They're not going to reimpose the filibuster on themselves.
Why would they do that, right?
So my first hope that these guys were like not real impressed with the Trump presidency, no, it was just a misunderstanding on my part based on, oh, I don't know, wishful thinking.
But also wishful reporting. Because I didn't know that. Not that I'm a wonk or anything. I'd like to think I'm a wonk, but I'm really not. But I didn't know that until you texted that to me, and then I found it buried in one article tonight about Rex Tillerson.
Right, so...
So how many people don't know that?
Most people.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, right? So... McCain is touring the Baltic states, God knows why. But, you know, he's taking questions about Tillerson, and he says he has concerns about Tillerson because he's opposed sanctions on Russia after the Crimea annexation. In his relationship with Vladimir Putin, I have concerns, but at the same time, I'm certain we will give Mr. Tillerson an opportunity to make his case about why he's qualified to be Secretary of State.
Which basically means we'll vote him in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, so the three people who are named as potential roadblocks to that nomination were Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, and John McCain. So if you've got John McCain already kind of caving and wavering as he's touring the Baltic states,
yeah,
you're not going to get that 51 majority on the Democratic side to block.
Now we can gear up to try to start pushing towards, you know, get McCain to hold the line and everything. But I got to be honest, I don't know how much value that's going to have. I don't want to sound defeatist, but fuck.
Well, you know, at the risk of rehashing defeats that have already happened, I watched the internet explode around the Electoral College. Oh, come on, let's push for those Hamilton electors. We could potentially flip this in the Electoral College. And I thought, no, you guys, it's already done.
You know what actually happened?
More people defected from Hillary.
Hillary, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much for that idea. No, I mean, you know, enough wishful thinking, right? We gotta be sure where we can hold the line, and it looks like we can do that on Supreme Court nominees, which is going to be good. Now, but going back to Tillerson, so a couple interesting things, though, about him. This is off of Breitbart. Fuck you guys, but this is off of Breitbart.
Are you really quoting Breitbart? Oh, my God. Okay, this better be good.
No, because Liberty University President Jerry Falwell Jr., fuck that guy, is defending President-elect Donald Trump's pick for Secretary of State, former ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson, after he faced backlash from the evangelical community. Okay, so basically, Tillerson, ExxonMobil, is actually given a lot of money to Planned Parenthood over the years.
Oh, how funny.
Right, but to cover this, Falwell said, quote, his position on social issues I don't believe are relevant in the position of Secretary of State. I don't think he'll ever have to weigh in on any of those issues. I think he's going to be out cutting deals like he did as CEO of a global enterprise with Exxon. I think that's what we need in that position. I don't think his position on social issues will ever make a difference as Secretary of State. And it's like, so
I'm picking my mouth up off of my desk because I'm really not sure how you can divorce yourself from your ideas about social issues when you're the Secretary of State.
Right, because, I don't know, human rights, you know.
Well,
things
I mean,
like that.
That's a phrase that's not going to be important in the Trump administration anyway.
Probably not. So the thing that's interesting here is that, so I go back and forth. Is Breitbart calling this out to piss people off? Or is Breitbart calling this out to say it's okay? You know, telling the right that it's okay or they should be mad. I'm not sure which one they're trying to do. But what I find interesting is that Breitbart basically had to put this story out there in an effort to calm down the evangelicals.
I was going to say, it sounds like damage control.
Right, you know, courtesy of Steve Bannon, right?
Yeah. Although, supposedly, his nasty little fingers aren't in that pie anymore.
Oh, right, because, like, he doesn't just call up Breitbart and say, hey, I need you guys to publish this.
Right.
Oh, I have no you're right. I have no monetary interest, therefore I have no connections left at Breitbart. It's not the people I put in place at Breitbart. Oh, come on. This is the thing, right? So it's talking about conflicts of interest, right? And we'll go back over here to
Tillerson.
Tillerson. Where's the article? Where's the article? Had the article. Why is this Mariah Carey article here?
Well, while you're looking for that, I've got a couple of things just scrawled out about just his financial conflicts of interest. So we talked
right,
about
that's
his,
where I was going.
We
yeah,
talked about so. His stock holdings. So his stock holdings alone are worth $240 million. He ended up with a nearly $70 million retirement package from Exxon. And what's being said now is that he is either going to have to divest his current holdings in Exxon or recuse himself from any negotiations that impact not just Exxon, but the oil and gas industry as a whole. So he either ditches his stock or he doesn't get to weigh in on anything that has to do with gas and oil industry.
Okay, but so here's this neat little small print.
The small print.
Yeah, because you're right. He generally speaking, he would either have to not have that interest, usually in a blind trust, which I question that, but right. Okay. Second of all, you could have somebody else in the room doing the negotiations, but I don't know how that would really work. But here's the thing, right? Here's the drain hashtag drain the swamp. The Office of Government Ethics says that Trump would have to put in writing that he does not believe Tillerson's financial holdings present a substantial enough conflict of interest to violate federal law while he serves as Secretary of State. In other words, Tillerson can seek a waiver from the president.
That's disgusting.
Which way do you think this is going to go?
Right. You know, and that's the thing overall, and I actually said this to someone earlier today. It's what stuns me, what continues to stun me, is just the lack of reaction to any of this. The lack of reaction to the fact that we have this guy who has these huge oil and gas interests, who has been, quote, a friend of the Soviet Union. Soviet Union, listen to me, I'm totally dating myself. A friend of Russia.
Soviets.
So much so that he was inducted into the Order of Friendship, which is their highest honor for people who are not citizens.
Gerois.
But his ties go back to Boris Yeltsin.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking way back to the early 90s.
Yeah.
So, but no one flinches. And it's not just Tillerson. I mean, we see day after day after day, another thing comes out about this interest in the Trump administration, or another thing comes out about this person, and no one says a word.
Well, and there's a variety of reasons why the opposition isn't where you expect it to be. And first and foremost, the media is not prepared to do the opposition, so that's a big problem.
Right.
Even the Washington Post, right? I mean, there's so many moving parts that they can't keep their eye on the target either. Because, you know, and that's what Trump was successful doing during his campaign, right? You couldn't get anything to stick to him because nothing stayed in the cycle for more than about 2 days. And if it did, he started to tweet something about how some asshole, you know, needs to get a nose job or whatever, you know? So.
Even as someone who is interested in being a citizen activist, it's overwhelming. I mean, the amount of stuff to digest and think about and protest is overwhelming. I mean, one of the things that I've kept saying to people is, don't get tired, don't get tired, don't get tired. And we've got 4 years of this. I know.
Yeah. Right?
I know.
You know, we gotta keep going. But yeah, Supreme Court nominees, that's where we're going to be going. But, you know, then you got to account for the fact that there is a large number of Americans who believe that government should be run like a business. So they think having business guys running the government is the best thing since sliced bread.
You know, all I can tell you is that I swore I wasn't going to go there. And on Christmas, my mother said something about she was protesting that her brother's cardiac surgery had gotten postponed because of emergencies. His elective cardiac surgery got postponed because of the number of emergencies that had stacked up over the holidays. And I said, well, all of you people who voted for Trump, this is just the beginning. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, it didn't go well.
No, you know, I mean, she can't keep up. So fortunately for me, unfortunately for her, it was a losing fight on her side. But, you know, okay, fine. So we're going to allow government to be run as a business. Then give up your holidays, give up your vacation pay, give up your health care, because it's going to be run like a business.
Yeah. nobody knows what that actually means, of course.
Right.
And by the way, running it like a business apparently means, you know, that you have $70 million in retirement. And $240 million in stock options. Well, so you know, if I'm going to get $240 million in stock options from the United States, sign me the fuck up.
I just want to dig a little deeper, and these numbers are for Heno, right? I don't know if you saw his post on our Facebook page, but he said he would like to know and hear us talk about the net worth of Trump's cabinet. And ironically, right after he had posted that, I was listening to MSNBC, and the current estimated value is a laden word, a financial value, monetary value of Trump's cabinet, $14.5 billion.
Yeah, net worth.
Yeah. And Tillerson, so he has a net worth of $150 million. This is from the New York Times' list of the highest paid CEOs in 2016.
So he's actually on the low end of the spectrum.
He was number 29 on a list of 200. His pay in 2016 alone was $24.3 million. And there were actually people who were bashing on him for not making quite as much money in 2016 as he did in, he did in previous years as the CEO. But, you know, unfortunately for Exxon, they were hurt by some of the sanctions that were put in place after Russia annexed the Crimea in 2014.
Which Tillerson opposed.
Yes, right, exactly. And he is very much in favor of removing any sanctions against Russia because, hashtag drain the swamp, the sanctions that have been placed on Russia for annexing the Crimea have cost ExxonMobil, $1 billion so far. Not $100 billion, $1 billion. So do you think he opposes it because, I don't know, maybe his stock interest might be suffering?
Well, of course.
So, yeah, and just to kind of put it in perspective, his pay as Secretary of State is a little over $200,000.
He ain't doing it for the money.
Right, right.
At least not the, let me rephrase that. He ain't doing it for the paycheck.
Right. That is exactly perfect. He's not doing it for that paycheck.
And I got to be honest, I always question this. Like, if you make this much money, why the fuck do you want to be in public office? Right.
The other thing that's interesting to me about that is, you know, and I would love to be able to have the time to dig back and see when last we had someone as unqualified as Rex Tillerson. The article that I read said it's been decades since we've had someone in this position who has not had civil service or military service. So who was the last person who was as unqualified as Rex Tillerson? I'm not sure.
Oh, McNamara.
Didn't he? He at least had military ties and military experience, didn't he?
No, he was at a Ford Motor Company.
Ah, well, there you go. Now, was he Secretary of State or was he Secretary of Defense? He was Defense.
He was Defense.
Yeah, because I'm showing my naivete and my age, but I remember learning most about him from the documentary The Fog of War. Yeah, he was Defense.
Yeah. Okay, so...
because he got us embroiled in Vietnam.
Of course, yeah, well, of course, you gotta... how do I want to put this? Qualified, though, that's a really loaded... that's a really loaded thing as well, right?
Yeah, no, because... I think that's fair. I think that's really fair to say that.
Yeah, I mean... to see if I've got a list of who's had the position, but not getting it easily. Okay, so
you know, all we know is that it's been a long time since someone has not had any kind of civic or military experience in this position.
Because here's the thing, though, right? Who's the current Secretary of State under Obama?
Kerry.
Yeah, I should know that. Okay, whatever. You know, Senator. Clinton before that. Okay. Powell and then Condoleezza Rice, right? Under.
I think it was Powell and then Condi.
Yes. Yeah. I thought that's what I said. You know, Powell was in the military, but I don't know that he was qualified to be Secretary of State. Plus, he's the guy who went in front of the UN and said, weapons of mass destruction.
It's very true.
Warren Christopher under the Clinton administration. He was all right. Ups and downs. Madeleine Albright as well, I believe, right?
Right.
First Bush, Baker. Reagan, Haig. Haig was a military guy, but, I'll be honest, I thought Haig was a fuck.
Yeah, so far. I'm not impressed with the list that you're sharing.
Yeah, you're right. So the thing is that,
Okay, so maybe I'll back off a little bit on the not qualified argument.
Because, what does qualified mean, right?
Okay,
Warren Christopher and Madeleine Albright, probably the only two people on that list who I know for sure were lifetime foggy bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah, State Department people.
I will push forward on the conflict of interest, though. I mean, I think that's the thing that's the most scary is that, first of all, Russia's interests are now our interests. I think that's very true. And just, is this guy going to be able to see beyond the lens of the oil world?
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing is that if all I got to do is ask the president for a waiver.
Right.
Well, I got to be honest, when I look at the way the system works and everything, I look at his $240 million and go, I don't see a conflict. Because I'm just going to jump in front of the Trump administration on this one and go, you're right. There's no conflict. I mean, this is sad and highly disturbing, but I don't know how we fix this problem.
Well, and it may be, and I think we've talked a little bit about this, that the best thing that comes out of this presidency is that we're even more disillusioned and aware of how broken our system is.
Well, I think this is really going to put to the test this whole thing about business should be run as a government, or government should be run as a business. Mm-hmm. Either this is going to work or it's not.
What's really interesting, though, is that people who I thought were thoughtful people and people who, quite honestly, I thought more highly of, I run into them and we end up talking about this and they're like, oh, thank God. Well, at least we're going to have a businessman in office. And these are people who are not thinking about the social implications. They're not thinking about Planned Parenthood. They're not thinking about abortion. They're not thinking about gay rights. They're not thinking about the potential that Mike Pence could be our next president.
Yeah. Social justice. I mean,
It's really interesting, though. And what I see is exactly the Monday morning quarterbacking that the Democrats are coming up with now, which is that, we really did misread the failing middle class vote.
Yeah. You think, guys?
The people that I'm talking to are people who are really struggling, like people who have their spouse has been laid off in the oil industry, and all of a sudden they're down to one income, and it's not a great income, and they don't have insurance. Right. But there are also people who don't have the foresight to look forward and go, not only did my husband lose his job and I am taking this crappy job so I have some insurance, but, the insurance market's going to get worse? Really?
Yeah, how does that help anybody?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And just once again, if you're already on the government dole, i.e. my mom on Social Security and Medicare and all that, telling me how bad the system is makes little to no sense to me. Sorry, Mom. oh my God, this insurance stuff, this is horrible. I'm sorry, wait, what?
Because if you think it's bad now.
You're already getting free insurance, right? Or relatively free, right? I don't understand why you think other people shouldn't get that anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. And I'm coming away from this now, or coming toward it now, just thinking that we have so much more to learn about where the Democrats totally blew it.
Well, I think, and I'll be honest, fuck them. They blew it. They can either get their shit together or they will just find a new party. I mean, seriously. It may take a couple more cycles, but right now the Democratic Party has got nothing to work with, so they better get...
I would honestly say I have no sense of loyalty to the Democratic Party, and especially not when I hear things like, oh, by the way, that filibuster that I thought was intact? No, yeah.
Yeah, we fucked that up for you guys a while back. Yeah, no problem. You know, but yeah, and if the Democratic Party has actually moved on to trying to figure out where they went wrong, that's nice, because I'm really sick about hearing on how the fake news stories are what cost you the election, or how the Russian hacking cost you the election. No, it didn't. Your own fucking candidate cost you the election. The fact that you guys, you know, totally missed the fact that the red states really were actually red, you know, cost you the election. The fact that you weren't listening to Nate, much as I hate to say it, cost you the election.
Although that slimy little bastard was calling it for Hillary right up to the end, so.
Yeah, but he was really reluctant. The whole way he was like, you can see it, right? He's like, yeah, this is what the numbers say, but... Anyway, I don't know. I will say this, right? It may be time for everybody to take a step back, and this may or may not educate people onto, you know, what we actually have in common with each other, and how I still believe that what we have in common with each other is far greater than what we disagree on, and is far more than what anybody in this cabinet has in common with us, any of us.
I hope that people will see that. I am concerned that the people sure. that I've talked to who are already, oh, you know, thank God there's a businessman in office, and don't see beyond that, who think this may be some magical turnaround of their circumstances. I'm scared right. that they're going to get even more angry when it doesn't turn their circumstances around. And they'll just lose all hope altogether.
If you're out of business in the oil industry, it may have something to do with all the fracking and everything in North Dakota that drove the prices down. I'm just saying. Might be that. Might not be. I don't know. The hell do I know?
Yeah. You know, even if we do turn around the oil industry, which, you know, I don't even know what that means. Even if we do turn it around, it's brief. It's short-lived. We really do need to think about sustainability, you know?
Yeah, there's that whole problem. But the thing is that there was no money in oil in the United States. I mean, as far as jobs and stuff, there was no money in it until, you know, just a few years ago when fracking happened, right? When the ability to produce oil in the United States actually got to a point where it was cost-effective and could make money. The problem was that supply outstripped demand, and then there was no money to be made in it. People are out of work because the industry kickstarted itself in a big way, and everybody forgot that this stuff is boom and bust anyway.
Absolutely.
Oil's not sustainable ever. As far as I can tell. I mean, and if you disagree, please feel free to educate me on it. I'm getting educated all the time now about
oh my god.
Really
every day is an education.
For better or for worse. But I mean, and I hope to some degree we can focus on that stuff going forward, right? What is it that actually unites us? And it's really, you know, I get it, right? If you're out of work, or you're not making the money you were making, you don't have health insurance, man, you know, I get it, right? And we need to talk about that and stuff. The problem is, I don't know how we get the problem isn't that you don't have health insurance because the government's not giving you health insurance. The problem is you don't have health insurance because private business isn't giving it to you.
And handing this country back over to private business is going to make it worse, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't know how...
How can it not?
I don't know how we change that perspective. I don't know how I change the minds of the people who look at me and say, oh, thank God there's a businessman coming into power now. Okay, because he has all of your best interests at heart.
Right. Yeah,
so,
you know.
I don't know if there's anything else to really say. I don't know if we said this out loud about Tillerson or not. You know, one of the things that I was reading was that he may actually mitigate some of Trump's anti-Islamic rhetoric, because he'll
right,
be able
yeah.
to tell Trump that it's not profitable to be so soundly against Islamic countries and
like
and
Saudi or fucking Arabia. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that could be interesting. That could be.
I think the thing is that, you know, they use the word Muslim to say we're going to not let any Muslims in. Right.
Right.
What they really mean is they're not going to let any Muslims in from oil, from countries that have no oil.
There you go. So I don't know. That may be a rabbit that gets skimmed out of the hat with this nomination. But it goes back to that mind boggle that you were talking about at the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean,
if we lose the cabinet, it's just, I mean, we've already lost the cabinet, but if we lose
if I'm gonna throw up a stink, I'm not even sure that this is the guy I'm gonna throw up the biggest stink about, but
I think if this guy who stinks to high heaven doesn't make people flinch, no one else will either.
Right, no, I believe that to be true, absolutely. Although, really, really got a problem with Rick Perry.
and not so much with the dude who wants to get rid of the EPA or the Secretary of Education who wants to get rid of the public education.
Right. And I got the same problem with Ben Carson, right? Which is, these two are fucking idiots.
Right.
You know? I mean, like, this is one thing I won't say about Tillerson. I have no reason to believe that Tillerson is not a smart guy. I suspect he must be a smart guy to be the head of ExxonMobil, right?
I agree. There is nothing that I have read that has impugned his intelligence.
Yeah.
His ethics, maybe. His intelligence, not a bit.
Well, I'm not even sure his ethics are really, you know, he's answerable. Despite what I might think about it and everything, the reality is he's answerable to his stockholders.
Well,
he makes his stockholders money. That's his job. That's what he's supposed to do.
Okay, so that's fair. I would say his ethics as a Secretary of State versus his ethics as the head of a business.
Yeah, you might have some concerns about that. Yes, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so stay tuned. This will be interesting.
So what do we do? I looked up specifically, how do we oppose Rex Tillerson? Well, the Sierra Club has a take action site, which I can forward to you if you want to put it up.
I will be glad to put that up.
You know, basically what it's doing is the Sierra Club is using your data to notify your senators to withhold their vote for Tillerson's confirmation. So certainly if you don't want to share
Californians need not apply.
Right. And really, honestly, Alaskans need not apply for the opposite reason. But so, you know, what I wanted to say is if you don't want to give your information to the Sierra Club for them to do data mining with, you just have to directly call your senator and tell him or her not to vote for Tillerson.
Right.
I mean, we'll certainly put up the link so people can have it if they want it. But the bottom line is we need to be making phone calls. And writing handwritten letters, not emails.
Right.
And we need to be working on not getting tired.
I agree.
Which is really hard because I was freaking tired over the holidays. I was freaking tired.
Oh, yeah, we all were. But I'm not sure that I will put a lot of effort into this one. Because I want to save the effort for the Supreme Court.
Well, or save the effort for
where we have a chance to actually make a difference.
Right. But I don't know that we will have a chance with the Supreme Court. We'll have to talk more about that. I definitely want to hear your opinions about that because I feel like that's lost.
Well, we can filibuster it.
Even though we've got the filibuster, I feel like that's lost.
Well, that may be. Yeah, because, you know, hopefully you're not tuning into us to get, like, hope.
So, but on that note, tell me something good. I don't care what it is, but tell me something good. It can be personal, it can be global, I don't care.
Yeah.
It can be, I petted my dog 30 minutes ago.
We'll go with that.
So my good is that I was challenged by my Buddhist teacher to save up for a Buddhist retreat in 2017. So that is what I am doing.
Oh, very good. Very good. No, I shouldn't be so totally flippant. I will be coming to your neck of the woods.
Yeah. Have you sprung that on the in-laws yet?
Yeah, tickets are packed. Tickets Sweet. Are set and everything. I'll send you the dates.
Very good.
I think, if I can get my calendar, I think it's going to be in May.
So we just have to make sure that when you're around, we have the time off. So do make sure that you get those dates to me.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You know, I mean, I got to be honest, it's been a really lousy couple weeks, you know, because of, you know, my stepfather and the whole Alzheimer's right. thing. And, you know, it's just, I got nothing good to say right at the moment.
Okay, so, so Facebook friends, listeners, anybody who's out there, please tell us something good. Michelle, yeah, Judith, Hanno, Hannah, our Hannah. Regular listeners, somebody tell us something good.
Post something good on our Facebook page,
please. Or if you've got a cause where you really think we can make a difference, or if you've got a way to protest where we can really make a difference, please.
Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely. If you're working on a drawing a blank, yeah, if you're working on a petition or anything, let us know. Be more than willing to give you some free advertising on our website for, you know, but it's a little thing, but you know,
I'll tell you a couple of other good things. So I'm involved with a group called A Think Tank, not Think Tank, which is a Young Turks show, but if you look under A Think Tank on Facebook, we're gradually compiling and updating actions, that people can take in protest to this new administration. So I'd strongly encourage people to look there. I actually have the time off to go to the Women's March on the 21st of this month. So hopefully I won't end up in jail. So the Women's March on Washington is taking place the day after the inauguration as a protest, as a feminist protest to Donald Trump. And there are protests that are happening, echoing, I think, in all 50 states. And I'm going to the one in Anchorage. So.
Excellent.
Yeah. I know. I'm tired, too. It's hard to find good right now. I mean, I'm sorry, you guys. We finished 2016 with the death of Princess Leia. This world is fucked.
Yeah, but we'll recover.
I hope. I really hope.
I do too, but we will. We will.
You know, I think the good thing is that we may be going into a place where we're learning that some of those ties to each other are way more important than anything else.
Well, that would be my hope for 2017.
Yeah, mine too.
Talk to somebody that you disagree with and to find something you do agree with them on. And I guarantee you, it'll be somewhere around, you know, putting a roof over their heads, getting their kids educated, whatever.
Oh, actually, that made me think of another good thing. So Nick and I did donate quite a bit of money, at least for us, you know, not comparable to, say, Rex Tillerson, to causes that were near and dear to our heart, like the vets who went and helped at Standing Rock and Planned Parenthood and People for the American Way. So we were able to give some money to groups that were meaningful to us at the end of the year. And that felt really good. And I know not everybody can give money, so I would encourage people to give energy where they can't give money. But
well said.
That felt really good.
Thanks.
Well, I didn't figure that I would take us out with Good Omens. We'll do that next time. And I think I've read this before, but it was a New Year wish written by Neil Gaiman. I think I read this last year, but I thought it would be nice to revisit. So,
yeah, let's do that.
So this was written on December 31st, 2011. And Neil Gaiman says, "A decade ago, I wrote, 'May your coming year be filled with magic and dreams and good madness. I hope you read some fine books and kiss someone who thinks you're wonderful. And don't forget to make some art. Write or draw or build or sing or live as only you can. And I hope somewhere in the next year you surprise yourself.'" He says, "Then, almost half a decade ago, I said, 'I hope you will have a wonderful year. that you'll dream dangerously and outrageously, that you'll make something that didn't exist before you made it, that you will be loved and that you will be liked, and that that you will have people to love and like in return. And most importantly, because I think there should be more kindness and more wisdom in the world right now, that you will, when you need to be wise, and that you will always be kind. And for this year, my wish for each of us is small and very simple, and it's this. I hope that in this year to come, you make mistakes. Because if you're making mistakes, then you're making new things, trying new things, learning, living, pushing yourself, changing your world. You're doing things you've never done before, and more importantly, you're doing something. So that's my wish for you and all of us, and my wish for myself. Make new mistakes. Make glorious, amazing mistakes. Make mistakes nobody's ever made before. Don't freeze, don't stop, don't worry that it isn't good enough or that it isn't perfect. Whatever it is, art or love or work or family or a life. Whatever it is you're scared of doing, do it. Make your mistakes next year and forever.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, well, hey, everybody have a good couple weeks and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to hear anything in particular, or if you just want a break from politics and you want to hear something else, let us know. At this point, we don't have a specific topic set for next time, but we'll see you next time, and you know we'll be griping about something.
All right, take care.
All right, you too.
See the loaded eyes of the children too, trying to make the best of it the way kids do. One day you're gonna rise from your habitual feast to find yourself staring down the throat of the beast they call the revolution. IMF, dirty IMF, takes away everything you can get. Always making certain that there's one thing left. Keep them on the hook with insupportable debt. Democracy. And they call it democracy.